The views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of Acuma, its board of directors, its management staff, or its members. The podcast discussion presented is conversational in nature and for general information only.
Hello and welcome to Acuma's On Point Podcast, the policy series, where we focus on the policy issues impacting the credit union mortgage industry. I'm your host, Peter Benjamin. Today's episode is being brought to you by LenderPrice, the most modern and proven product and pricing engine in lending. Whether it's enhancing the pricing experience or efficiently matching homebuyers with the ideal loan program, LenderPrice empowers all credit unions to excel and innovate in today's dynamic market. Their cost-effective pricing engine provides modern APIs that deliver seamless integrations, full product and rate support, custom workflows, and it's simple and easy to use for loan originators. LenderPrice is proud to sponsor the Acuma On Point Podcast policy series, where discussions on the policy issues impacting credit union mortgage lenders take center stage. Get to know LenderPrice and book a demo at www.lenderprice.com. Joining us today as our resident expert is Zach Pfister, Policy Director with Brownstein. Zach, welcome to the podcast, and how are you doing today?
Doing well, Peter. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thank you for being here and coming back, actually being willing to come back. Now, Zach, I don't want to say there's been a lot happening in D.C. as of late, but it most certainly feels that way this month. You know, here we are, March. Seems like a lot's happening, you know, earlier this month. And I know this is something you're going to address. We had, you know, obviously the State of the Union, but things are starting to move in D.C. It kind of just feels that way. But obviously, we want to get your perspective. We want to get, you know, your thoughts on the things happening in Washington. So if you could, you know, provide us a quick update on the latest and greatest happening in Washington that mostly that are impacting our members.
Absolutely. And thanks again, Peter, for having me at the Acuma Viewpoint Summit in Phoenix the other week. It was great to address the attendees. And for all those listeners out there, if you haven't attended one of these Viewpoint Summits, I highly encourage it. You'll be glad you did.
Absolutely.
Peter's right. Lately in Washington, it has been housing. This has been an interesting few months. I would argue that the focus in the committees of jurisdiction on Capitol Hill and out of the White House and regulatory agencies, we've seen a significant uptick in housing proposals coming from every angle. And, you know, part of that, I think, is a buildup over the last several years as we've seen, you know, mortgage rates kind of remain somewhat stubborn. But as we see inflation coming down, you know, one of the president's kind of key takeaways has been that, you know, mortgage rates should generally follow suit. It's a lagging indicator in some respects. So it needs to catch up with where they want it to be.
So if I can jump in with a question.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I read a lot of policy documents and I do my best to stay on top of the things happening in D.C. Same with like the economy, right? I do my best. Mm-hmm. You know, but oftentimes, you know, in mortgage rates, you know, as we focus on mortgage rate, it has a lot of economists, it has a lot of housing analysts just scratching their heads and rethinking their models for this year. Is the administration, or are they just scratching their head saying, hey, what's going on with interest rates?
I think that they are hopeful that the next 6 months and with the prospect, because I think it keeps moving, with the prospect of rate cuts forecasted by the Fed, that we might see in kind of an expedited decrease in those rates. But I think in the immediate term, to your point, Peter, I think there are some with their heads, you know, being scratched, and they are trying to come up with alternative proposals that may address some of these issues on the front end, outside of the rates themselves. And, you know, I think that the State of the Union is a good place to kind of start on that discussion. Right around the morning of the State of the Union, the White House released the president's broad housing plan. Many of these proposals were featured in the address later that evening. But there were two key themes that the president focused on in his speech with respect to the space we're discussing today. The first theme was mortgages. The second theme was affordable rental housing. Mm-hmm. On mortgages, to your point, to our conversation here, the president sought to reassure prospective home buyers and pointed to falling inflation as a leading indicator of forthcoming decreases in mortgage rates. But he also proposed a temporary $400 a month tax credit for first-time home buyers to address rising mortgage costs. He notably dropped surprise announcements that relevant agencies are in the process of implementing pilot programs that will eliminate title insurance fees for federally backed mortgages. And then on rental housing, he kind of used some aggressive rhetoric and went after quote unquote big landlords with allegations of violations in antitrust laws and price fixing that drives up rents. There are some DOJ investigations kind of underway on that front. And then, touted multiple proposals to provide more federal financing for rental housing. But in the broader plan that was released the same day, he called on Congress to do, multiple things. Give you a couple examples. One, a mortgage relief tax credit that would provide middle-class home buyers with an annual tax credit of $5,000 a year for 2 years. Another one-year tax credit of up to $10,000 to middle-class families who sell their starter home, which would be defined as homes below the median price in a given county, so long as those homes go to another owner-occupant of the residence. It also emphasized his pitch for a $25,000 down payment assistance for first-generation home buyers.
Which is a big issue we've talked about that a lot in our past events. So that's excellent. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, absolutely. And then further on the title insurance front, pointed to an FHFA pilot that would waive the requirement for title insurance on certain refinances. So that gives you a couple examples of the president's broader plan. But I'd note that he did also. Really emphasize the administration's ongoing campaign to crack down on so-called junk fees. You've seen now that the White House kind of separately announced the creation of the strike force, mm-hmm. The strike force on unfair and illegal pricing, not to be confused with Space Force or something out of Battlestar Galactica, perhaps.
By the way, did you ever watch that? Do you watch that show on Netflix? It's awesome. Really, Steve Carell is amazing. But anyways, I'm sorry.
No, it's a good one. But the strike force would be co-chaired by the DOJ and the FTC, so it would certainly kind of take more of an enforcement investigatory approach to some of these debates around pricing per se. But
so can we stick with that? It's a lot of the junk fee. Task force. And for those who obviously people can't see me, I did bunny ears, air quotes. A lot of it's geared towards, credit card, right? And late fees that are predatory, right? A lot of it's geared towards that. When it comes to mortgage, I think about junk fees and, yield spread premiums, back in the day, 2007, 2008, and how they were very predatory. People on the Hill, people in D.C., the administration, doesn't really matter. Are they saying that's still happening in mortgage, or is it mostly geared towards that credit card side?
I would argue that at this point in the junk fee crusade, the overall administration efforts on this front, that we are far beyond the traditional notion of what a consumer may view as an unnecessary fee or a nuisance fee, or in some cases, a true junk fee where it's just a tack on add on with no, business use case, no fee for service. And what we're seeing, the credit card late fee is a good example because it's visible and, billions of credit cards out there in circulation. Everybody knows what a credit card late fee is. But it is so much broader than that across all industry sectors at this point. So, a resort fee, a mortgage application fee, a rental application fee, a background check application fee, and this is my own opinion, but I think we are getting, we are treading in waters now where if every fee is a junk, if there is no such differentiation between a legitimate fee and a junk fee, and everything's a junk fee, then nothing's a junk fee, right? Or right. Vice versa. And I think the waters are getting very muddied in terms of that seemingly broader and broader classification of what is determined as a junk fee. And I think with respect to the, you know, to the mortgage industry in particular, I would point you to a recent CFPB blog post that came out day after the State of the Union, and certainly not by coincidence, where the CFPB kind of gave a preview that it will soon undertake, or may consider, I should say, undertaking rulemaking and guidance focused on, again, you know, my air quotes, anti-competitive closing costs, which could include origination fees, appraisal, credit reporting fees, discount points. So if you think about the entire lifespan or totality of the closing process, you know, some longstanding, you know, fees for service all of a sudden are now in the lens as well. And it kind of begs the question, like, where does this, you know, where does this stop, right? Is the goal here to eliminate any fee in existence anywhere for any industry sector? Because I think there's a growing number of, you know, folks, you know, looking at this you know, broader effort and wondering if any fee would be acceptable to, you know, to the regulators, to the White House at this point, because it is a very easily digestible messaging effort. And, you know, I think that a lot of industries are kind of looking at this and reevaluating, but also, you know, wondering if there's kind of any end in sight or any future differentiation between the two.
But, you know, so Zach, you know, it's interesting, right? Because, you know, oftentimes, you know, these fees are attached to something, right? You know, whether it's, you know, a credit report. Now, typically with a credit report, it's one for one, right? It's, you know, if a credit report costs $60, you know, that's what's typically being charged, or maybe even less. You know, then there's the origination charge, right? And I would often describe this to a member where I would say, you know, the origination charge is what we really use to kind of offset the costs for keeping the lights on, basically. You name it, we have to keep the lights on somehow. But then there's the discount point, right? The discount points are often optional, right? That's where the member, the borrowing member, chooses to lower their interest rate by paying a fee, right? It's not that fee is going directly to the credit union or the mortgage lender. It's simply going to the investor or whomever is purchasing that loan on the back end to kind of offset that cost for giving them that lower interest rate, right? So it's tough, right? I'd welcome your final thoughts on this. I know we need to transition. There's other things you want to talk about, but, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the administration is really focused on, and when I say administration, I'm really focused on, you know, yes, the Biden administration, but it's also, you know, the people they have in play, whether it's Chopra, whether it's Thompson, or, you know, obviously, you know, we all heard that Fudge is retiring, but
right.
But it seems like they're focusing on affordability from a cost standpoint, not so much from, you know, we'll say the cost associated with the transaction rather than the actual interest rates or even the price to purchase a home, right? That's still the major cause of delay. But anyways, welcome your thoughts on, you know, some final thoughts on that point. We can keep moving through your list.
Yeah. So I agree. I think that they are looking at this from kind of a multi-pronged approach, right? So the thing that we need to remember here is that a lot of these proposals coming out of the president's housing plan, we'll talk about the budget here in a second, but many of these, a majority of these would need congressional approval, right? So any tax credit, any legislative proposal would need congressional approval. The president can't simply institute, the White House can't simply institute a $25,000, you know, down payment assistance without, you know, funding approval from Congress. And so they look to the regulators as a means to either find ways to assist on the, as you put it, the transaction side of the equation, or on the enforcement side of the equation, right? So that's why you're seeing the fees debate, the kind of the investigations around price fixing or antitrust, and then you're seeing the proposals that would require congressional approval. And so I do see it as kind of this multi-pronged, you know, everything at the wall approach, because, you know, we're in a very challenging kind of political environment, compounded by the fact that we're in an election season. And so, you know, it's best to view these proposals as a menu, kind of an aspirational menu or wish list, that if the president had a, you know, any president had a trifecta of, you know, congressional and White House control, that we may see some of these kind of move further. Now, you know, if the elections pan out where both chambers of Congress flip and President Biden is reelected, then, you know, he will have to work with that Congress to move on this front. But I would argue that housing affordability issues have really increased in terms of bipartisan concern on Capitol Hill as of late. And, you know, regardless of the outcome of the election, I see this issue, you know, staying at the forefront, you know, for the foreseeable future, until, you know, either those rates come down or, you know, inflation drops further. I would just note that, you know, shortly after the State of the Union, the following Monday, March 11th, the president released his budget. And so that corresponding housing plan was kind of put into the FY25 budget requests. You know, in addition to what I just kind of rattled off, it included, you know, other tax credits, like a neighborhood homes tax credit for, you know, construction and sale of rehabbed and newly built single family homes in more distressed communities, a $20 billion innovation fund for housing expansion, which would really focus on the construction of more affordable multifamily units, but also new starter homes for kind of the middle income bracket. And then, you know, and I know you saw this, but also, you know, a call to double the Federal Home Loan Bank's contributions to the affordable housing program from 10 to 20%. Yep. So it is worth noting that, you know, a lot of these would require congressional approval. President's budget is more of a wish list in any given year. You know, and then I mentioned kind of in this same vein, while you have the housing plan release, the budget coming out, you know, the White House is also touting those enforcement actions that I referenced earlier at DOJ, at, you know, at FTC and at CFPB in particular. And, you know, I kind of go back to that CFPB one because those blog posts are often kind of a precursor to some, you know, RFI or notice of proposed rulemaking down the line. So those are always good to kind of keep track of as well. All in all, in totality, everything we just kind of ran through, the White House estimates that these proposals would result in the construction of roughly 2 million new homes. It's a data point that they stand by. But again, that's in a perfect world that these policies would be implemented, but it gives you a good flavor as to where the debate is going, at least from, you know, a Democratic administration. But that's not to say that Republicans and Democrats on Capitol Hill don't have their own kind of thoughts and proposed solutions to this. And I know we focused a lot on the administration side, but you should know that this is also, you know, we're seeing this increased activity up in Congress too. Just 2 weeks ago, or 8 days ago, I guess it was, the Senate Banking Committee held a legislative hearing on, you know, a slew of different housing proposals, you know, a hearing dedicated only to housing policy, which doesn't happen that often. And their intent there is to put forward a package of bipartisan bills in a markup, which is even more rare in Senate banking. They rarely hold markups these days. And I think they're looking, you know, at some time in the next month or two to kind of move forward on some of these proposals. And this afternoon on the House side, the House Financial Services Committee is holding a hearing on challenges currently facing homebuyers with witnesses that include the mortgage bankers, the Fair Housing Alliance, so, and the National Association of Realtors, I should add. So, you know, it's all to say that the lens on housing policy is very bright right now. The real question is, can policymakers or the administration get some of these proposals kind of across the finish line? Because obviously they're paying a lot of attention here.
Okay. And so a lot's happening in housing, right?
Absolutely.
And so, housing, but all, there's other things happening in DC. Like, any quick updates on, obviously AI? I mean, it seems like, honestly, AI, it seems as though you mentioned this in Phoenix when you presented to our group. It's a moving target that people in DC are trying their best to keep up with, right? Any movement on that, right?
Absolutely. So it is very fluid, and I would say it keeps moving forward, but also kind of sideways at the same time, if that makes sense. So since we last spoke, there was the House Financial Services Committee established an AI working group, a bipartisan AI working group. So we should anticipate seeing continued activity within the committee. That group includes both Chairman McHenry and Ranking Member Waters as part of the working group. So I think the goal there is to explore whether the committee can, in a bipartisan fashion, put forward some proposed solutions on this front with a financial services lens. I think, as I mentioned, every committee on Capitol Hill is looking at this from the lens of the kind of industry sectors or policy areas that their respective committee of jurisdiction regulates, because AI's applications span the gamut, right? It could be healthcare to energy to financial services, et cetera. And so it's such a gargantuan issue that they're trying to wrap their heads around. And to conceive of a singular piece of comprehensive AI legislation, it's hard to fathom at this point in time, but they acknowledge that. That's why they have so many working groups. That's why they have different committees working on this. And I think the end goal here is, and this may still be, a couple years out, is that each respective committee has put forward, a piece of legislation or a package of bills that, seek to provide guardrails and guidance and maybe regulation with respect to AI in these industry sectors. And they come kind of together with somewhat of an omnibus approach to, wrapping their arms around this. I would also note House of Representatives also established a bipartisan AI task force in recent weeks, led by representatives of House Republican and Democratic leadership, and as well as kind of key members of these respective committees. And so, we're getting into I don't want to say a lot of cooks in the kitchen, but a lot of interest, a lot of working groups. They just need to figure out a way to kind of harness this. I think Senate Majority Leader Schumer has kind of remained the tip of the spear from the leadership perspective of Congress on really trying to drive this issue forward. Arguably, the Senate, I would say, is a little organized in terms of other working groups and forums that they've been holding. And he indicated in his floor speech just the other week, his weekly floor speech, that this will continue to be a priority for the Senate moving forward. And after we get over this government funding deadline hump, hopefully by Friday or Saturday, you'll see the Senate kind of shift to other focuses, including AI.
Okay, awesome. I mean, not awesome, but I mean, you get what I'm saying, right? It's still, no matter what, it's a moving target. It keeps ever evolving, and I don't know if we'll ever see the end of this, right? Because we just can't keep up. So anyway, good.
My last point on that, Peter, is because of the molasses pace that this may take in Congress, it's more the reason to stay up to date and be vigilant on guidance and proposed rulemaking and proposed enforcement actions coming out of the regulatory agencies. On this issue, they're going to be a lot more nimble, and they're going to have a lot more latitude and flexibility to call it as they see it at the given time. And we should expect, kind of continued action on that front while Congress tries to, look at legislative proposals.
Good. Well, we're approaching time. It flies by. I know it does. Any final thoughts before we kind of transition and close out?
Yeah, I think I'd just close by saying we just ran through a kind of a round robin of policies impacting the credit union industry, and in particular, credit unions who are in the mortgage servicing business. What I would say is, I think this is only the start of a kind of continued drumbeat here. Just kind of looking ahead, we expect FHFA Director Sandra Thompson to be testifying on the Hill sometime in mid-April. They're still kind of locking down a date. Secretary Yellen on the Hill twice this week. She'll probably be back again in the spring. The prudential regulators will be up testifying before Congress in mid-May. And, you know, the elephant in the room, we are now in full-blown election season. So
sure are.
Expect every time you turn on, your preferred cable news channel, you're probably going to see both presumptive nominees, talking about issues that are of importance to you. I know the president was in Nevada, or I think he's in Nevada today, giving a speech on housing affordability. So it's a hot topic right now, and more to come.
Okay, awesome. Well, Zach, thank you very much. I know you're a busy man, and you probably have to run off to the Hill in just a few minutes. But thank you very much for being here, and of course, sharing your wisdom on everything policy with the group. Really do appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Okay. And again, thank you to Lender Price for sponsoring today's podcast. Without you, we wouldn't be able to bring such amazing content to our members. And to really just close out, thank you to all of you. We know your time is valuable, and thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of Acme's On Point podcast policy series. We hope you enjoyed it. Until next time, we'll see you soon. Take care.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time at the Acuma On Point podcast. If not already, be sure to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. For more great episodes and information, be sure to visit us online at acuma.org. And to get the latest updates, head over to our LinkedIn page.